Welcome to this presentation. We already had an overview this morning, so I'm going to assume that you guys all know what a Phone 7 is, that you know that you can even use it to place calls. Okay, we showed that. And go away, emulator. You're not on yet. So, okay. Now, just to introduce, I'm going to show two slides that we saw already this morning, so sorry for that, but it's to make an introduction to what we are going to talk, and then we'll go deeper into the topic. So nowadays, if you want to develop for Windows Phone 7, you have two frameworks that you can use. One is Silverlight, which you are going to use to develop applications. And here I want to be precise because, as it was pointed to me, maybe this morning it was not totally clear. What I'm talking about here is a version of Silverlight for the Windows Phone, which is running on the phone. It's not running in the browser. It's really part of the operating system of the phone. You develop using Silverlight, that's the same framework, okay? And then you deploy to your phone as a standalone application, right? So we use the same APIs that we have on Silverlight for the desktop, except that it's Silverlight 3, all right? It's not running in the browser. It's really a standalone application. And then you have XNA, which on Windows Phone 7 is typically used to develop games, okay? XNA is a, I'm not a super big specialist, but this guy is, so you can ask him questions here. Anyway, I'm not a super specialist for XNA, but what we can say about that is that it's a great framework for 3D models, okay? You can very easily load existing models into that. And then you have a program loop, which is very good for games, which allows you to create effects and to move your models very fast in that. So you already have some very impressive 3D games on the phone made with XNA. And by the way, there is a nice integration with Xbox Live, so when you play on the phone, you actually earn points that you can use later in Xbox Live. So today we are going to concentrate on Silverlight because that's more my field. And we are going to use what is probably the best tools available in the mobile landscape. Visual Studio is really a very, very powerful development environment, and especially it has a huge advantage is that your guys know that already, okay? Your teams probably already work in Visual Studio now. And they probably already work with C Sharp and maybe even with XAML. So for them, climbing on Silverlight for the Windows Phone 7 is really going to be quite easy. We also use Expression Blend, which is a visual designer. I'm going to show some examples later, which allows you to have a visual view of your application and to go and build animations, effects, complex UIs without having a problem. And all that is free. So when you download the Windows Phone 7 tools, you install them. If you have already Visual Studio and Expression Blend, they will install on top. If you don't have one of those, it's going to install the free version instead. What is going to happen tomorrow? Well, for us, tomorrow is going to be Mango. That's the name of the update, which is in preparation now. And this update is going to come very soon for developers, not in the phone yet, but already as an emulator and new tools, with approximately 1,500 new APIs, including, for example, Background Agent to make some multitasking, or Raw Camera Access if you want to build some augmented reality applications. You will have access to sockets to build chat programs, for example, and Skype, for example, has already been announced for Windows Phone 7. You will also have IE9 and the possibility to run HTML5 in your browser and more. You will also get improved tools, for example, a profiler. You know that performance is very important on a small device like this, so you need to be able to analyze where your application has some performance issues. And the profiler is going to help you to do that very nicely running in Visual Studio. Also, some simulation, for example, locations or GPS simulation for the emulator, orientation so that you can move the or simulate that you move the emulator and get the corresponding events in your application. And also, I mentioned before, the developer conference, previously known as PDC, now they have a new name, but they don't want to tell us. It's going to apparently reveal a few secrets about the future of Windows. In Anaheim, in California, 13 to 16 September, based on experience of previous conference, I'm pretty sure it's going to be live streamed on internet, so you will have the possibility to check that out, maybe during the night, because they are 9 hours behind us. But so, pretty exciting future for Windows Phone 7. For Windows in general, mobile is starting to be very strong. Now, this morning we made a demo which was pretty simple and not really following the best practices, especially it was very tightly coupled. Okay, I want to show you here, in just a few words, a very popular architecture that we use in Silverlight applications, in WPF applications, and now also on the Windows Phone. And this is a model view model architecture. I'm not going too deep into the detail here for multiple reasons. First of all, there was a session about that yesterday. Second of all, I gave already a few sessions about this, and those sessions are available in video. So I'm going to give you the link so that you can go. And in case that's a concept that you want to know more about, don't hesitate to go and watch those videos. They will bring you up to speed with also a lot of samples on the phone. Now, model view view model is something which is a little bit similar to model view controller, except that instead of having one big controller for the application, we have multiple smaller ones for each view. Each view has a small controller, and we name this controller presentation model or view model. Okay? You can think of the view model like a little bit, you know, when there is an orchestra, the orchestra is the view. Okay, you have a lot of animations playing, and then you have some transitions and navigation, and all that has to be orchestrated by the guy with a stick, huh? With a, how do you say that? The wand, right? The conductor, exactly. So the view model is a little bit the conductor in your application. Okay, it's the driver of the view, if you want. Now, in Silverlight, what's pretty nice, and of course also Silverlight for the phone, is that we can use data binding to create the binding between the view and the view model. So you have a loose coupling between your view and your view model. Okay? Data binding is a declarative way to say this property should follow that property on that object. Okay? So there is a nice decoupled architecture, which is easy to test. You can test much more of your application because now you can also go and test the conductor, the view model. Okay, so your view is very much thinner than it used to be in classic applications. And also, it is easy to extend because you have those clearly decoupled objects. Another advantage, which personally I love, is that this architecture works very well in Expression Blend. So it allows you, for example, to create what we call design time data very easily, and to work in Expression Blend in a very comfortable manner, which we will see in a moment. As I said, there are two talks that I gave about MVVM. The first one is an introduction. It was actually given at Tech Days last year as well, so maybe you heard it already. And a few weeks ago at Mix in Las Vegas, I gave another talk, which was really a deep dive into MVVM, which was something like a continuation of the first talk. So with those two, you will be up to date. I want to mention two frameworks which are very popular in Windows Phone 7 development nowadays, and which each of those frameworks has strengths and certainly a fan base. But each of those frameworks uses something like MVVM and builds onto that and offers you components to help you build your decoupled application. The first one is called Caliburn. It is developed by a good friend of mine, Rob Eisenberg, also a Silverlight MVP. And Caliburn has a micro version which is running on the Windows Phone. It's a framework which is very much using convention over configuration, which means that there is a little bit of magic going on, okay? But it's nice because it's, a lot of tasks are automated. The other framework, MVVM Lite Toolkit, is made by yours truly, and it's very popular. I was actually surprised how popular it gets. Quite a lot of applications are using at least a part of, at least some components of MVVM Lite. It's a very light framework, non-intrusive, and allows you to build your own architecture on top of that. I also want to mention the Windows Phone toolkit. Okay, there is a Silverlight toolkit for Silverlight, and the same team is also doing a WP7 version of that with quite a few controls. Okay, so it's actually nice, first of all, because you get updates a little bit more often than you get updates for the phone, because it's developed really out of band. Okay, they have their own schedule. And also it allows, this is an open source framework, so it allows you to dig into the source and check it out. Unfortunately, due to intellectual property, blah, 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 they cannot take contributions from people outside of Microsoft. But the team is very reachable, so if you have something that you need or if you have a bug, you can very easily contact them and get that. This would be the URL, so it's the same URL than the Silverlight toolkit, okay? And today I'm going to show you how to use that in Blend. We are going to add a date picker to our application, something simple. Something else that we are going to do in this application today is use Bing Maps. There is also a Silverlight control for Windows Phone 7. So here you have two URLs, two locations to visit. The first one is where you can get a key, because you need a key for your application as soon as you place requests against any kind of Bing service, okay, map or also geocoding, etc. We will talk about that more in details in a moment. And also you can go ahead and download the control at this URL, and this allows you to do some pretty cool maps integration in your directly in your application in a very easy manner. So, without further ado, let's do some code. I'm going to show you an application which is already actually built, and then we are going to extend it. Okay, this application is actually pretty much the result of what we had after the advanced MVVM session that I mentioned. If you didn't see this session, no problem. I'm going to run you through the architecture and explain to you the advantages. Okay, if you saw that already, means that it's a refresher for you. Now, this application here has a web server which is running somewhere in the US. That's my personal web server. And it has here a list of friends which is formatted in JSON. Okay? I'm using JSON for the data transfer. Who doesn't know what JSON is? Never heard. Okay. JSON, JSON, is JavaScript Object Notation. It's a lightweight XML. It's XML without all the unnecessary stuff, pretty much. Which means that when you transmit data over the wire, well, over the non-wire, right, over the data connection of your phone, you don't have to pay for all this unnecessary stuff. All right? So it's a file structure, okay? You can do pretty much everything you can do in XML, but it's less, you have less unused characters. So here, you have quite a lot of services using JSON as a data transfer protocol, as a data transfer format. For example, this is directly inspired from the Facebook API, actually. So, well, here I have everything on one line. It's not very interesting, but you see that I have objects, collections, the possibility to define properties and values for all that. Now, my web server is super simple. It's actually a simulation of Facebook. If you want, it's simply going to load this file and return it to the caller. So nothing very, very fancy here. Because we are doing Windows Phone 7, we are not doing server. Here, this is my Windows Phone 7 application. And what I have here a high-level abstraction of the service. Big enough? In the back, you can read? Yep, okay. So I have an abstraction of my service. This method here is going to load the list of friends. It's an asynchronous method. Every time that you make a web request in Silverlight, it is asynchronous. So I have my method, and I have a callback, which is going to be executed when the friends are loaded. Okay? All that is explained with a lot of details in the videos that I mentioned. Okay, I'm going a little bit faster. Like this, we can extend. But it's simply a service that I'm going to be able to call. Now, I have two implementations of that service. I have one, which is the actual implementation, which is going to run at runtime. Okay, this is the implementation of the iFriend service interface. And this implementation here has the getFriends method, is going to use a web client to download this text file from the web server. Since it's asynchronous, I have a completed event. And now, what I get is JSON, so I'm going to use a JSON serializer to deserialize this into a list of objects. I had strings, and then I deserialize that automatically. Okay? And then I'm going to convert that into a list of friends. And now I have my C-sharp object that I can really build, that I can really use. I also have another implementation of iFriendService, which is called DesignFriendService. Now, this one is going to be used by Blend at design time. This is also an iFriendService. It also has GetFriends, but this time I'm going to create 20 random friends. Now, how do I decide which one I need to use? This is the task of an object which I call ViewModelLocator. And ViewModelLocator is in charge of creating all the services that you need and of creating the so-called view models, which are going to be the drivers of the views. The ViewModelLocator is included into app.xaml. So this is a global resource, which is handy because it means I can access it from anywhere in the application very easily. And since it is defined in XAML, it's also very Blend-friendly. Blend loves the ViewModelLocator. It's able to go and access the children of that. The ViewModelLocator itself is using an IOC container, which in that case is a very simple one. It's actually part of the new version of MVVM Lite. But you could also go ahead and use Unity or Castle Windsor, StructureMap, even MEF if you wanted, or to not use an IOC container at all. Okay? IOC container is like just a helper if you want to help you create your services and your objects. And then I'm going to register the design friend service if I am in design mode. So that's a fancy way of saying, if you run into Blend, use that service. On the other hand, if I don't run into Blend, I use this one. Then I'm going to register my view model, and the view model gets an instance of the friend service injected inside the constructor. So we use a technique called dependency inversion, okay, or injection in that case, dependency injection. The injection itself is handled by the simple IOC. So that's the strength of IOC containers, is that you can define your signature, you can register your object, the rest is handled by the object. We are working with the friend class, which is a simple data transfer object. There is nothing much to say about this class. It has a few properties. And then we are wrapping this class into another one called friend view model. Now, the reason why I'm wrapping this one is because I want to be able, without touching the data transfer object, which is very simple, I want to be able to add properties which are going to help me drive my view. For example, I could add here an address string, which is actually going to aggregate two different strings on the view model. This friend view model is going to be rendered in a list, and we are going to render that with a so-called data template. Okay? So we have here multiple models, view models, and everything is wired together. In terms of views, we have two in that application. We have the main page and the details page. And then we have a few helper class to do the navigation from one page to the other, and also to handle showing controls, showing dialogues to the user, for example, to request feedback or to show a warning or an error. Okay, this was a quick walkthrough of the architecture of the application. As I said, you can have many more details in the videos that I mentioned. Okay, so if you want to have more info about that, go ahead and look for it. Now, this application is highly blendable. So what does it mean? It means that if I go into Expression Blend and look at the main page, notice that I have my dummy friends, my design data appearing in Expression Blend, which is pretty cool because it allows me, for example, to select the list box and to go ahead and edit the template. For example, I'm going to add the picture of my friends. So I'm going to edit the item template. Notice that I remain in the context of my friends, so I'm really editing directly visually. I can see what I'm doing. I can add here a colon. I'm going to make this colon 124 pixels wide. Here we go. Then I'm going to take this stack panel and put him in the colon number one, which is the second colon. Here we are. And now I'm going to take an image control. Add it in the first column. I'm going to make it 100 times 100. Remove margins. And then I'm going to make a data binding. And notice that Blend knows that this data template is rendering a friend view model because my application is wired in a way that Blend likes. So I can here expand the model, see all the properties that the model has, and select the picture URI and say OK. Now this is design time data, so I'm just getting some picture from the web in that case. But this allows me to do all my design visually. I'm also going to do the same in the details. In the details page, I also added here a design time friend. So I have my information. And here too, I can go ahead and select an image. I'm going to put it here, make it 100 times 100. And then let's add a little bit margin, 24. As I said before, it's a magic number in Windows Phone 7 for margins. Oops. So, and I'm going to add 0 here and maybe 12 on top. And now I can do my data binding. Could have done this already before. And again, picture URI. And now I see, again, the picture of my friend directly in Blend. So you can do a lot of editing visually if your application is wired correctly, which allows you to work extremely fast, believe me. Okay? Maybe a small anecdote, when we did the SBB mobile application for the Windows Phone 7, it's a fairly complex application in terms of UI because you have a lot of information on the screen. When we came with the very first version of the design, they were not super happy about it. It was too dark, etc. And we were able in just one night to change the design completely in the whole application because I had all the design time data in Expression Blend, so I was able to see design time trains running, and I was able to change the design very fast. Okay. Good, now I'm going to add... you have a question? Yeah, right. So the question is about internationalization. That's very hard to say, so I'm going to say localization instead. So the answer is you can trick Blend into using the French, English, or whatever version of your resource. It's possible, okay? We don't really do that so much, actually, because usually the people who translate are running the application and checking out how it looks like. So the way that we did for mobile applications was send them the list of resources. We arranged in advance that the text should be more or less of the same size, which is always a critical point when you do localization, right? And then when we got the text back, I integrated them and I actually ran the application in multiple languages. There is a possibility, however, to trick Blend into believing that it is running in a different language. It's actually fairly simple. You have to tell Blend to use the current culture and the current UI culture to the culture of your choice. So in your code, Blend is actually running code, right, which is pretty obvious because I have my design time data being created. So somewhere where you have this design time code, you can actually set the current culture. Okay? Good. So now I'm going to use the Silverlight toolkit. And in fact, I'm going to make a confession here. I'm already using it because it's one of the first DLLs that I add to pretty much any Windows Phone 7 applications. Okay, the toolkit is made by Microsoft. It's free, pretty safe to use it in any application. So here I have my DLL, but it would be very easy if I didn't have it to add it through the .NET project. Okay, the toolkit is installed into the global assembly cache, so you can locate this DLL. Or you can simply browse for it. So now this is this DLL, microsoft.phone.controls.toolkit, which means that in Blend, I can go ahead and select, for example, the date picker. And now I can add a date picker to my stack panel here. And I'm also going to add a label. So I copy the label from the top. I'm going to change the label from to date of birth. And then I can go ahead and select the value property of the time picker and do a two-way binding to the date of birth of my friend. Now, why do I want a two-way binding? Because I want not only to be able to read the value and display it, but also to set the value back into the model. So let's select two-way. Now, the cool thing is that notice I'm totally disconnected from the view model here. I have a very nice abstraction, right? Somebody is in charge of providing me with the date of birth, and he doesn't know how it's going to be rendered. And another person is in charge of rendering that, but he doesn't know how the date of birth is being read. So there is a nice disconnection here between the two, and you can work in a very abstracted manner. So now at this point, I can try to run the application. I'm going to run it in the emulator. Blend is a development environment, so I can build and run directly from here. Build succeeded. We have the emulator starting. And then I can go ahead and load the list of my friends. Here we go. The pictures are loaded asynchronously, so they come a little bit later. And now if I select a friend, the green ones are the ones who are older than me, by the way. Yeah, I know. Huh? That's kind of sad, I know. But anyway, you know, it was a little game because when I did this presentation at Mix, I did it actually one day before I turned 40. So, you know, after a while, anyway, start to feel lonely. So here I have the details of my friend Corrado, who is a good guy because he's older than me. And if I click here on the date of birth, it's going to show the date picker UI, which we know from the native look and feel on the Windows Phone. Now, my computer here is a multi-touch computer, so I can actually even use it here. Set a different date. Let's make Corrado 1 year younger. And did you notice that those, I'm just going to show you that again, those icons are missing, right? Now, there is a small trick with those icons here. This is explained in the documentation, but I'm just going to show you. You have to add a new folder, and this new folder needs to be named toolkit.content. And then I'm going to add the icons in question. I have them in a folder here called icons. Then I'm going to take the cancel and the check mark, add them. And now I'm going to set them here with the properties as content and not as resource. That's a small trick, but like this, you saw that once in case you use this control once. Here we go. And now if I build and run, this time I'm running from Visual Studio. Okay, it doesn't really matter. Now we will see that the icons have been defined. Here we go. Now I can select my younger daughter here and show the daytime picker. And now we see that the icons are showing up correctly. Okay, so now we did some improvement to the application, but let's go a little bit deeper, okay? Notice that my friends, at least some of them, come with an address information, okay? This is their place of origin or whatever you want to name that. This is a city and a country, and I would like to represent that on the maps, on the Bing maps, okay? So that's already a little bit advanced. So we are going to do that now. The first thing I'm going to do is add a user control that I built, which is using the Bing Maps assembly, and then I'm going to run you through that. In order to use Bing Maps, I need to add a reference. Now here too, if you have installed the control, I showed you the link for the download before, you will find it in the .NET here, but I also included it here in this reference folder, so I can take the maps.dll. Then, I'm going to add this bingmapscontrol.xaml. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. And I'm going to add a couple of objects which I use to do this geolocation service, if you want. Location data, geoservice base, and geolocation service. Now, I'm going to run you through that so that we understand what it is doing. Location data is not very relevant. It's just a very simple class with information about the location and also the color of a pin, because we are going to put pin on the maps. Much more interesting, the geoservice base has here the key that you need to go on Bing Maps. Okay? I'm going to ask you when you run the sample demo at home to create your own key. Okay? So I'm going to have to remove that and to deactivate this key, unfortunately. But it's very easy to go to the Bing Maps portal and to get your own key for your own application. It's a matter of minutes, really. And then I have this geo-coordinate watcher, which is the actual sensor of the phone, which is going to return to me the location. Now, it's not just a GPS, okay? The location is an aggregate of multiple information. If you have GPS, it will get it back to you. But it will also make a triangulation of GSM antennas. And also, if I'm connected through Wi-Fi, it will actually be able to return my location, because Wi-Fi routers are actually geocoded as well. Okay? And it's surprisingly good. This morning, for those of you who were here, we saw our location quite precisely, and that was Wi-Fi only. Okay? Now, I'm going to cache the last location, because based on experience, sometimes when you press twice too fast, the first time you get a location, but the second time you don't get one. So it's a good idea to cache it and then to keep it for a while. Then here I'm going to actually create this watcher, and I can give it an accuracy. If you have a high accuracy, it's going to use your battery a little bit faster. And if you have a lower accuracy, maybe 100 meters, then you have a longer battery life, but then you are less precise. I have two event handlers, status changed and position changed. And then I need to start and to stop the watcher. Be careful to think of stopping it, because again, you don't want to use the battery of your users too fast when you don't actually use the watcher. Okay? Then, here, I have my status changed. And here there is a small specialty that you need to be careful about. Those events are executed on the background thread, always, okay, for all sensors. So I'm using here a utility class from MVVM Lite to dispatch that to the main thread. I need to do that because otherwise I will have a cross-access exception in my application. Dispatching is fairly easy. In that case, using this utility class, it's quite easy to do it. Now, I can have multiple statuses, but the ones that really interest me are disabled in case the user in the settings said, no, I don't want my location to be used. No data, that would be when the sensor is unable to resolve a location. In that case, if I have a cached location, I'm going to use it. Otherwise, I'm going to send an error. And then I have also the position changed, which means I get actually a location. I'm going to cache it. And then I'm going to call this onWatcher position change method, which is an abstract method. So that's a base class for all location services if you want. Now I have an implementation for that, which is a geolocation service. And this one, I'm going to use it to show my location, my current location on the map. And when I move around, the pin is going to follow me on the map. Okay, with quite a good precision. So I'm using here a movement threshold of 20 meters. Which means that every time I move by 20 meters, or at least every time the sensor thinks that I moved by 20 meters because it's moving a little bit, okay, then it will actually send an event. This is just going to raise the position change event, and then the Bing Maps is going to use that. So we are going to see that now. Now to use those utility objects, I have here a Bing Maps control, and that's a user control. So what I will do here is place that on top of my details page. It's going to be rotated and collapsed at first, so we are not going to see it. But when we press on the address, it's going to call a method which shows the Bing Maps control and which starts the whole geolocation services. I have a couple of animations to show and hide the control. Here I have a data template which we are going to use to represent a pin on the map. So I will have the map layer, then I will have a pin layer, and then I will have an additional layer on top where I can go ahead and draw something. For example, draw a route, or in that case, I'm going to put a small box with the name of my friend on top of the pin. Now, though this is using a data template, which means that we are using something very similar to a list box, except that it's not showing friends stacked, it's going to show pins on a map. Then I'm creating here a layer. This is a layer that I mentioned in which I'm going to draw my boxes, my borders and text blocks. And I'm creating that in the resources just so that I have access to the XAML. Later in code, we are going to get that and to actually place that on top of the map. Finally, the last thing which is interesting here is this grid, which is a container for the map. Right now it's empty. The reason is that I don't want to slow down my animation when I show the map's control. So I'm going to place the map's control in the grid only when my animation is completed. Let's go to the code behind for this control. Here, I'm going to create an observable collection which is going to hold the pins that I want to represent. So as I said before, it's like when you do a list box, you have data objects, in that case, location data, and then those are going to be translated to pins in this layer that I showed just before. Then, we are going to have the showFriends method, and showFriends is going to be called when you tap on the list with the address. This is going to send the friend view model. And here I'm going to create a location data with an orange color and with the coordinates from the friends. I'm going to add that to the pins collection so that it appears on the screen. And then I'm going to set the position of the pop-up so that it is just right nicely on the pin. Then I'm calling showMaps, which is in fact simply started the animation that I mentioned before. When this animation is completed, we jump here, and here is where I'm going to create the new map. Okay, so I create it in code. I need to give some credentials with the key that I mentioned before, and I'm going to apply a zoom level of 8. 16 would be very close, street level, and then you can choose the zoom level which is better for you. I'm going to create a so-called map items control, which is a list box for pins. It's a special type of items control which is going to show pins. I'm going to set the positions of a few pop-ups here, nothing very, very interesting. And then I'm going to start the actual geo service. Starting the geo service means that I'm creating the geolocation service that we saw before, the one which is going to observe with an accuracy of 20 meters. I'm going to register for the position change event and then start the actual GPS, the actual observation. When the position change means that I moved around, okay? I'm going to set my own location. So right now I will have two pins, the one of my friend which doesn't move and another one which represents me, which moves around with me, and then also set the position of the pop-up. Okay? So this here is what you do with the maps. Okay, it's a little bit of code, but it's pretty straightforward following the steps, showing the map, creating the pins, and then after that, the nice thing is that the maps is actually working with coordinates already. So as soon as you have your pin with the location data, it's going to be placed automatically at the right position. and also zoom and everything is handled by the Bing Maps control. Okay, we still need to use this control, so I'm going to open the details page. I'm going to go at the end of the XAML file because I want this control to be on top of everything, okay? And then I'm going to add here this control. Notice that it is placed in, it has a row span of 2, so it's going to cover my whole page, and it starts being collapsed, so it's not in the way of my tabs. Then I'm going to add here, this is a read-only text box which shows the address of the friend. So I'm going to add a mouse left button down event. This is going to be called when somebody taps, even though we talk about mouse, this is because of the compatibility with Silverlight. So in fact, we are having some finger events here. And then I'm going to navigate to this event, so it's going to create the event handler in the code. The event handler is going to check which selected friend is now represented in the page. Now I need to get that, and I'm going to get the selected friend here from the data context, which is a view model. So I'm just going to get that particular information. Then I'm going to register for the back key press. So why do I do that? When you have a pop-up which is shown in Windows Phone 7, it's a good idea to use the back button on the phone to close the pop-up. Okay, it's a good policy to do that. It's actually in the design guidelines of the phone. So this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm saying when the back button is pressed on this page, I want to call this event. And what this event is going to do, it's going, first of all, to call to set e.cancel to true. So it's telling to the navigation service, I got that. Don't bother, okay? Like this, there is no navigation, but I can do my own action, which is going to hide the map control. Here, I'm calling show friends on the Bing Maps control. So I will have this whole animation, which is going on. And then I'm going, in case there is an application bar, we will talk about the application bar a little bit later, I'm going to hide it so that my Bing Maps control is really taking the whole page. The last thing I need to do is say what happens when I close the Bing Maps control. And in that case, what I'm going to do is show again the application bar in case I had one. And unregister the back key press, because this time, when my Bing Maps control has been closed, when I press on the back button, I want to actually do the navigation. So now the map is ready to show my friend information, but there is still one problem. Here I have Stefa, Switzerland, and the Bing Maps works with coordinates, okay, longitude and latitude. So how can I translate that? Well, what we can do is get this information online from Bing services. So I'm going to show you how to do that. I'm going to add those objects. The GeoService result, just like before, is not very relevant. It's just a data object that I'm going to use to deserialize the information. Much more interesting, the iGeoCodeService proxy. Now, this is a high-level interface that I defined, which has one method called getCoordinates. I'm going to give the country and the city to that, and then I expect a coordinate in return. All that is asynchronous again because this is a web operation. I created an implementation of that, and here I'm going to use the REST version of the Bing API. There is also a SOAP version, okay? The REST version is not very complex. I'm going to create here a URL with country, region, locality, and of course the key set. And then I'm going to just ping this URL, which in Silverlight is done using a web client. Since all that is asynchronous, again, I will have a completed event. And what I get from this REST service is, again, JSON, JavaScript Object Notation. When I get this JSON, I'm going to use the same JSON serializer that I was using before to deserialize that, which means that now I have a collection of objects. The structure is a little bit complex. It's not my fault. It's really Bing who built it this way. But somehow we arrive to the latitude and the longitude. Now I'm going to do that only when my friend doesn't have this information yet. So if I go into the main view model, first of all, I'm going to do something in the view model locator. I'm actually going to create this geocoding service object, okay? Because I need it in my application. So I'm going to simply create it here in the simple IOC, in the IOC container. So as you see what I'm saying, when you need an instance of iGeocode service proxy, use the class Geocode service proxy. The creation of the objects is going to be handled by the IOC container. Now I could go ahead and do new myself if I wanted to, that's okay. But it's just that IOC containers do the code a little bit cleaner. And then inside the master view model, I'm going to inject that object. So first of all, I'm going to keep it because I'm going to use it multiple times in my view model. And then inside the constructor, here, in addition to the friend service, I'm also going to say I want a geocode service proxy. And I can go ahead and save that for later. Okay? Good. Now, what happens when I click on a friend in the main page? Okay, so if I'm here, and I go and click on Corrado, what's going to happen is that the selected friend is changing here because I have a binding between those, between my list box and my view model. Normally, what I was doing is navigate to the details page. Now, I don't want to do that. Instead, I'm going to check if the location of my friend has been resolved already. So I'm going to check if the selected friend, if the from coordinate has been set already, in case from country and from city are existing. If that exists already, I'm going to go to the details page. This is a simple navigation. Okay. If, however, I don't have the coordinates yet, I'm going to be there. And in that case, I'm going to resolve the coordinates. And since we have prepared the infrastructure for that already, it's actually fairly easy. First of all, I'm going to set isBusy to true. It's a property which is going to show the please wait box that we saw before. This is an asynchronous operation, which means you need to tell the user something is happening, okay? And then I'm going to use this geo service to get the coordinates of the friends. This is asynchronous, so I have a completed event. When I come back, if I don't have any error, I will actually assign those coordinates to the friend. They are cached for later, and then only I will go to the details. Okay, let's try that. I'm going to test in the emulator first, just to see if it works out. Here we go, let's load the list of friends. And now if I click on Corrado, Corrado is in Italy. If I click here, I'm going to see the map. If the connection is good, first we see the pin, and then we see the map being loaded, and we see his location in Milano. So it works. Now let's see how it works in the device. So I'm simply going to go here to device. And I'm going to, again, I'm connected with this standard USB cable. Press Control F5. The device needs to be connected through the Zune, so the Zune needs to recognize your device. And now we see that I have the application running, so I can press on refresh. The list of my friends is being loaded. Here we go. I can click this time, for example, on this one. You notice that there was a small please wait, so it means it has been loading the coordinate. And here, if I press here, I will see the map. And this is in Stefa, in my home place, okay? Now notice the U. U is me, okay? And this is actually my current location, which we can zoom. And here, I'm, as I said before, I am connected actually through Wi-Fi, which means that the location is resolved through the Wi-Fi. Not sure if it's true or not, because I'm not really familiar with Basel, but it should be around there. There is also, by the way, a satellite view, which you can very easily use instead of the maps view, if you prefer. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the application bar. The application bar is a little bit a weird beast. So this is the bar that you have, for example, when you go when you go into Outlook, here down there I have four buttons, okay? This is called the application bar. Now I'm going to show you how you can configure it in Blend, because it's a little bit of a pain to do that in XAML. So the first thing I will do inside the details page, I'm going to add an application bar. And I'm going to leave it empty. Okay, I just add it because I want to be able to edit that in Expression Blend. So here I type phone application page dot application bar. Okay. Now this is a property which sets the application bar, and then the application bar itself is into the shell application bar, and I just leave that empty for now. Now I'm going to change to Blend. And now what we will see after the page has been reloaded is that we have the empty application bar in the bottom. Now we see this area here is the application bar, and I can access it here through there. So I have access to some properties, for example, the background color. Now if I don't do anything, by default, Blend is going to use the default theme of the application. For example, if I switch here to the light theme, okay, you're going to see your application when the user selects the light theme on the phone. There is also a possibility to override that by setting the background and the foreground color on the application bar explicitly. So now I'm going, for example, to select here and say I want my bar to be dark green. Oops, come on. Okay. And you can do the same for the icons. The icons that you place, that's quite interesting. You place a PNG which is monochrome, okay, and then the phone is actually going to be in charge of changing the color. So they are actually in charge of drawing the pixels for you. So you add a white or a black icon, and then the rest is done automatically by the bar. Now I'm going to add a button. And here I can go ahead and set some properties. For example, the icon URI. Now I have already two icons in my application, but Blend is also proposing me a few standard ones. So I can go ahead and choose, for example, email. I'm going to add a text, and now I press OK, which means that Blend included this icon inside my application. Now we are going to set here an event handler for this email button. And what I'm going to do now, it's reloading the project, which means that I have to do that again. So I'm going to double click here again. And this time I have my event handler, which has been created. Now here I'm going to use something called an email compose tasks, and you have multiple tasks to communicate or to create things on the phone. Email compose is one. This morning we saw the web browser task. There is also a SMS compose task. Okay? There is also some chooser. For example, you can select a friend, an email address from your contact list, etc. And then I'm going to set the subject and the to line. I could also go ahead and set the body. And then I'm going to show the email and delegate the rest to the phone. Okay? Something to be aware of here is that I'm going to leave the application to do that, which means that if you have some states which need to be preserved, you need to actually go ahead and save your state before you call the show method. Okay, very fast, I'm going to add another button just to show you. And I'm going to do that in XAML this time, because I want to use an icon which is not one of the standard icons. So I'm going to add here another button. I'm going to use an icon which is not in my application yet called facebook.png. Change the text to Facebook. And then I'm going to set here the click event to Facebook click. For Facebook, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to take the Facebook URL in my friend and use a web browser task to show that in the external web browser. I still need to add the icon, and then we are going to be able to test. So I want here in the icon folder, which has been created by Blend before, to add another icon. Now, those icons need to be PNG. They need to be monochrome, like I said. And they need to be 48 times 48 pixels. And also, not just that, but you need the circle, which is around the button, is going to be drawn by Windows Phone 7. So you don't draw the circle yourself, but you need to leave enough space for the circle. The circle is actually 48 by 48. Okay? So now I'm including the Facebook PNG, and I just need to set here as content, like I did before, for the other icon that I was using in my map. Content, in my date picker, sorry. Here we go, and now I'm going to set to copy if newer. All right. Building, and now I can run this directly on the phone. On the emulator, you cannot really test sending an email because it doesn't have an email account configured, so it's going to protest. You can test that on the phone quite easily. If I was able here to change, please. So, can I change now? Yes. Okay, let's load that on the device. And yes, I'm actually timing myself because I want to avoid going overboard. So here I have the application. I can load the full list. I'm going to select Corrado. And this time I have two additional buttons. One is email. I can select which account I want to send from. And now I'm going to have the body set to hello from my WP7, the subject set to hello from my WP7 application. I can go back. Here I don't need to do tombstoning because I did a small trick on my phone, but normally you would really have to. And then I can go to Facebook, to the web browser. So that's what I wanted to show you. Now it's 1 hour, which means that we would have so much more to talk about, like, for example, tombstoning. And honestly, I hesitated to show you tombstoning, but that would take probably about 45 minutes, and I would not have time for anything else. So sorry for not showing tombstoning. I know it's a little bit hard, okay? But there are some tutorials online which are going to explain that to you. I thought it was more fun and interesting to do some Bing Maps integration here. More information can be found. First of all, these videos that I mentioned, Understanding the MVVM Pattern, and the other one, the Deep Dive, where we create the application from where we started from, okay? The Windows Phone App Hub, which is where you get started, get your tools and everything, register. And right now I'm open to Q&A. There is a little bit time. Please feel free to come and talk to me also after the session in case I don't have time to talk to everybody right now. Thank you very much for your attention and happy coding.